Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Drive Pink Dialogue. This is episode number 17, and I think the title says it all. Inter Miami gets humiliated by the New York Red Bulls. The question is why? That's what we're going to be talking about today. Think about this as a nice little therapy session. As always, I'm your host, Scotty. I'm here with my co-host, Soar. I'm sure you're not feeling great today, but how are you feeling?
Yeah, that's dampened my weekend. 4-0, big scoreline, not great. Let's get straight into it.
We want to start with a little bit of positivity and maybe end with a little positivity because I'm sure 90%+ of this show is going to be not so positive. So let's start with the best takeaway from yesterday's game, which is that three young aspiring athletes that have worked their entire lives for this moment were able to make their professional debuts in yesterday's game for Inter Miami. Yannick Bright in the 59th minute comes on, Leo Afonso also in the 59th minute, and then Pep Casas comes on in the 74th minute. These three players, lifelong dream, sharing the field with Suarez and Sergio Busquets and Jordi Alba, and they did it, and they deserve some applause. And I think that's my biggest, best takeaway from this game.
Yeah, I mean, they got thrown in the deep end. I was surprised that Tata actually brought them on when he did, because I feel when he brought on Afonso and Yannick Bright, the scoreline was 2-0, I think. So I was not expecting them to be given that go-ahead there. But you know what? That was a big bright spark. I think Afonso looked good in glimpses. Yannick Bright had his moments. But at that point, the game was beyond Inter Miami anyway, so they couldn't have made too much of a difference. But very positive that they got the chance and very happy for all three of them.
Yeah, I think those three, especially the circumstances they came into the game in, I don't think anything they did wrong was worthy of true criticism, especially just considering how everyone played in that game. So those three, I think, are absent criticism in this game. I also think Ryan Saylor, no criticism his way. Not a coincidence that those are the four substitutes that came on. I also thought Luis Suarez was probably without too much criticism in this game, at least comparatively speaking. And that is probably an exhaustive list of guys that don't deserve any criticism for this game. It was not good. It was bad from the start. They scored early. In the second half, they scored often. It was not a fun game. It didn't look like a fun game to play in the pouring rain. We'll talk about that. We'll go into each goal and why it happened and why we think it's just a bad sign. And then we'll get into some awards as always. But let's start in the pregame. We did our pregame show right before, and we talked about some of the things that we were concerned about in this game. But we also felt very positive about how this game might go. And it turned out we were dead wrong. Let's rewind to the pregame when we felt happy. Going into that lineup, we felt this is what it sort of had to be. Talk to me about how you were feeling about the lineup now in retrospect.
Yeah, I think both of us agree that this was the best lineup that we could have put out there. And we were feeling confident because it wasn't just Inter Miami who had lost some players. Even New York was losing quite a few of their main players. And I thought Inter Miami's depth was definitely going to be too much for New York Red Bulls to handle. And boy, I was wrong. These players did not show up. And in retrospect, I feel like we didn't discuss the 3-5-2 as much in the pregame as we should have. Maybe we got a bit comfortable thinking that, oh, this team's finally starting to play better in the 3-5-2, and we didn't actually touch upon the formation. But I think that had a big role to play in what kind of team was on the pitch and what they were doing. I just think overall this was a bad weekend, a day to forget for Inter Miami. Yeah, we just did not show up, and Red Bulls were there to capitalize on it. We made rudimentary errors. At one point, it looked like there were, you know, professionals were playing against school kids. So I don't think you can blame the lineup as such. That was the best lineup that we could have put forward. Maybe we could have changed the formation a bit, but there's absolutely no excuses. When you lose 4-0 to an opposition that you should be beating, and listen, the quality is there in this Inter Miami team, so there's absolutely no excuses to let 4 pass without a reply. And yeah, it's just one of those days that I think it's a big, big wake-up call for this team.
Yeah, I think before the game, we both thought that this was still the more talented of the two teams based on, based on who was available for both teams. And that didn't play out. But I think going back to the starting lineup, there was 10 players for this Inter Miami team available that had been major parts of the season so far. In fact, they had 10 players available that had started so far this season. And so it was just a matter of finding a way to get all 10 of those guys in the lineup at the same time. That did require Robert Taylor going to that right wing back position. It meant that our back three had, if we had to have a back three, there was no way to take those 10 and play them in a 4-3-3. And you're right, we didn't talk about this enough in the pregame show. We texted each other after the first goal, and I think we both immediately realized, how could we forget to talk about the formation for Inter Miami? And also, how could we forget to talk about the goalkeeping change? You know, I just mentioned that there was 10 change, or we had 10 starters that had played so far this season available, and we found a way to make it work. But we never talked about that 11th person, which was, of course, CJ Dos Santos. I think that in the end, we tried too hard to get the right players on the field, and not enough effort was put into getting the right structure for this game and the right tactics in place. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, there are a couple of points to that that I think are worrying signs. One, I agree with you that we thought that we would get away with this game just based on quality and the talent that this roster has. And I think going into this game, and us as fans as well, thought that if we put the right players in the pitch, they're going to be able to come out with a result. And I remember saying very distinctly during the pregame show that if this team gets into trouble, there are ways that we can switch around a few players and maybe get control of the game. All of that was absolutely out of the window yesterday. I think talent was trumped by hard work and determination that was shown by New York Red Bulls. And they just showed that talent will only get you as far. If you don't work hard for the team, if you don't work hard for the ball, if you don't work hard to win the game, quality is not going to be the defining factor. And that's what happened. And then secondly, an issue that I've started to realize, especially after this game, that maybe we get into it later as well. I think there are too many players being played out of position just for the sake of getting them onto the pitch. And I don't know, maybe this is just a factor of not having enough players right now because of the international break. But going forward, I would not want to see Robert Taylor play in that right wing back position because that's just not his position. I don't want to see David Ruiz play in that position. I want specialists in all the positions. And that's how you have a team excel in the long term. I know there are quick fixes for certain weekends, for certain games, where you need to fill up certain positions. But I just feel like there's too much rotation happening for players, and that sort of makes it uncomfortable and disbalances the team chemistry, if that's even a word. But yeah, those were the two takeaways that I had top line from this game.
Yeah, I'm thinking about the Robert Taylor job at right wing back yesterday, and I'm sort of thinking back to last year. We saw it a little bit, him as a right wing back or him as a right back, but I'm thinking that was more in the first half of the season. I think Tata recognizes that he's not good as a right wing back or as a right back, and so I don't think he wants to put him there moving forward. I think yesterday was probably just a desperation move to get him on the field, because ultimately you were going to have to play one of Robert Taylor or Leo Campana if you chose not to do this exact formation. And so I don't think he wanted to bench one of those guys and play, you know, a kid making his debut in the starting lineup.
Yeah, but why not play Gressel in the right wing back position? Have someone like a Robert Taylor maybe play in the midfield, because I think he'd be more suited in that role. But
I
yeah, this
but
is just
it's the same many, thing, right?
Yeah, too much
it's the same thing, yeah.
So I would have actually put Yannick Bright in. and given him the chance from the get-go, because I thought that might have been worth it. But you know what? We're talking too much in hindsight 2020 now that the game's not gone in our favor, I guess.
Yes. Let's do a quick recap of who was not available for this game. Obviously, no Lionel Messi, who's dealing with a little bit of an injury. Nico Freire also out with a hamstring injury. We're, of course, missing the guys that have been gone all season, and Ian Frey, Benjamin Kramaski, Farias. But also, we were really hurt by the international departures. Drake Callender, big loss. Federico Redondo, big loss. Diego Gomez, big loss. Even in this game, having a David Ruiz would have been nice. Having a Israel Boatwright would have been nice. Those players both on international duty. Same with Schneider Borgelin. So this was a team depleted of depth, even though the starting 11 was still pretty sound. Any complaints? Well, we'll get into it later about who we missed the most. But just like as a general feeling for the team, did you feel like not having those guys around, even if they weren't in the starting 11, but not being available, not being around the team, do you think that had an impact on how the guys felt? They knew they had to go 90 minutes, maybe. They felt like they had to conserve energy because they might not be able to get subbed off at any point. I don't know. Do you feel like that had any impact?
Yeah, I think there was definitely an aspect of the players just being too comfortable playing in the third gear and not having to put in their entire energy into this game. And again, I think everyone thought that we could get away from this game just based on quality, which was not the case. And the players just didn't show up. They just didn't show up to New York and they didn't play at their optimal level. And I want to give full credit to Red Bull. I don't think this was a case, unlike the Montreal game where we thought that maybe we were the ones who lost this game. I think Red Bull was fantastic. They scored 4 goals. They were very clinical. They really worked hard for the ball. They really worked hard to find the right solutions. And they were just the better team on the day. And our players didn't show up.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I think Red Bull is really good. And we'll talk about them more specifically a little bit later on. But let's get into the action. And maybe, you know, we like to ride through this pretty quickly, but maybe we should stop at every goal and sort of talk about how and why it went wrong. And we'll start with early goal from Lewis Morgan. We've had a bad habit of, in the pregame, identifying who's going to be really good for the other team and being right. And it feels like it comes back to bite Inter Miami every time we do that. It happened right away in this game, 3rd minute. Sean Nealis pushes it forward to Dante Van Zier, who has a nice little flick on to Lewis Morgan, who's making a nice run and puts in the back of the net. Right away, Inter Miami goes down 1-0. Who was at fault for this goal?
Oof, who wasn't at fault for this goal? My four-word comment in this was, where is the defense? It was awful to concede that. First of all, I think we knew that that New York's going to start with a high press, which they did. But we saw the same exact issues with the 3-5-2 that we've seen so far this season. Too much gaps between the center backs. I think it was Morgan who just had so much space between Avilés and Christoph, was just able to fill into that pocket without anyone covering him. And Van Zier got into the ball, rolled it on for him, and he had a clear shot. He could have even taken a couple of, you know, strides and then made it an easier shot for himself. But I think that double combination of Avilés and Cristal was definitely not communicating well, and they were the ones culpable for this goal mainly. And also Busquets, because he didn't track his runner. So those three were the main reasons I thought this goal conceded.
Let me try and break this down. I don't know if this is going to go off well just because there's no visual to sort of show what I'm talking about. But this play starts on a throw-in from New York Red Bull. It's not a turnover. It's not a transition opportunity. So Inter Miami has a chance to set their defense in an organized way. So I think that's important to start off with. The ball comes in from the opposite touchline, makes its way over to Sean Nealis, who's a center back, right? He steps up into the midfield, and Jordi Alba is playing sort of 3 yards away from Sean Nealis in this left wing back position, and he doesn't make a move to get in the way of Sean Nealis to make the pass more difficult. The problem with that is there's a New York Red Bull playing up high above past Jordi Alba that Noah Allen feels responsible to go defend, which spreads the back two now of Christoph and Aviles out. And then they have, not including the guy that Noah Allen comes to go guard, there's three New York Red Bulls against two Inter Miami defenders in Christoph and Aviles, because Robert Taylor's also not back supporting them. So now you have this numbers overload, and I don't think Tot Aviles or Sergei Christoph has any chance. I do think CJ Dos Santos could have done better. I don't think it was a great shot. I do think, and we'll talk about Dos Santos more, but to me, the biggest culprit of this goal is actually Jordi Alba for not stepping up and at least making that pass difficult, that entry pass difficult. And if you're not going to do that, then you're just out of position in no man's land, especially off a throw-in when you have a chance to set your defense. I thought that was the sort of the biggest culprit, because yes, Aviles, Christoph, they kind of get, I felt like they had no chance in this play because they had three attackers that they had to guard and an entire box to try and guard them. So to me, it was Jordi Alba first, Cedro Santos a little bit, and then, you know, the midfield also probably could have stepped into those gaps, but to me, I didn't feel like they were as responsible.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I agree with you totally there. I think obviously there were more than one players who were definitely culpable for this goal. I think, yes, Jordi Alba doesn't do the right thing, but he's just the first line of defense. There are two other layers that need to be bypassed before, you know, you get to the goal. And I think the midfield is actually more responsible here than the defense. And I agree that Aviles and Christoph were sort of left in a position where they couldn't do much with having two attackers to take care of, or three. But I think the midfield is where you need to have that cover from. And that would be the place where someone like a Sergio Busquets or a Lawson Sunderland come in and provide that cover to stop the runners, or at least track the runners from the midfield into the final third. So yeah, I think they weren't, if any of them had followed their runners, it would have been
they fine. Weren't runners, though. They weren't runners. They had set up that way where our wingbacks were playing sort of in line with the midfield, and Jordi Alba even farther up. And so we had three people in our back line, and they had four attackers from the header that comes in. So they had set that play up with a numbers advantage. The midfield, I felt like it was easy to bypass them because of how our structure was and how their structure was. And that was just, I think, poor recognition. So I understand what you're saying. They could have maybe stopped the play, but ultimately I think Jordi Alba finding himself in no man's land was ultimately what killed that play.
There was also another aspect of this goal that I want to talk about, and that perfectly shows what the 3-5-2 has been, how the 3-5-2 has been awful. And once Morgan got the ball, he didn't even need to shoot it to actually have a chance. There was a number 19 completely free on the back with nobody marking him, and I think that should have been Robert Taylor's man, where he could have just laid the ball off to him, and that would have gone in.
This is my point, and this is why I don't blame the back line. Aviles is slow to react to Lewis Morgan, but that's because he's stuck between two guys and they're both unguarded. So he eventually makes the correct decision to go with Lewis Morgan, but Robert Taylor was in no man's land. Jordi Alba was even worse, I thought, in that play, if you go back and watch it. But I agree. I think, and we'll talk more about the 3-5-2 a little bit later on. I don't want to dwell on this goal too much because how it impacts our structure, I think we'll get into a little bit later. So let's move on to a few extra moments in this game. The next one, I think, which is also a product of that structural issue, came in the 29th minute. Dante Van Zier gets a nice chance. Noah Allen gets pulled wide in the too wide, and there's not great communication behind him, and so the two center backs can't really handle it well. The other moment I want to talk about is sort of the one big transition opportunity Inter Miami had in this game, which is something that we did really well last week against DC, and we didn't do well in this game. Leo Campana has a nice little flick around his defender to Robert Taylor, who plays it centrally, and for a split second, it looks like we're going to get a 3-on-2, 3-on-2.5 with Lawson Sunderland in the middle, Jordy Alba to his left, and Julian Gressel to his right. Lawson Sunderland kind of fumbles the ball. This is right before halftime, and the opportunity goes to waste. Jordy Alba ends up putting in a cross for Campana, who does head it, but he kind of doesn't do a great job with it. So that was really the only opportunity that I thought was really noteworthy. I know Jordy Alba had a shot early in the 21st minute, but first half, not what Inter Miami wanted. We've seen them start slow, especially on the road. So it didn't feel like at this point Inter Miami was really in trouble. It didn't look like they were about to lose 4-0. It felt like a few halftime adjustments, maybe a little bit of a change in how we structured our team, and we might be able to get right back into it. How were you feeling at halftime?
I was feeling fine. I thought, okay, this is another one of those games where we're going to have to come back from behind. Well, as you mentioned, the last few chances that we had with the 45-minute transition, I think Campana had a really good flick there to Robert Taylor. I thought we could have done much better on that. But that's when I thought, okay, we're back in it. We're now starting to play a little bit. People have woken up. They're starting to do what they do. And I was confident that going into the second half, we're definitely going to see some changes structurally, which would allow us to get back into this game. And I was wrong.
Yeah. Okay, let's get into it. Lewis Morgan doubles his tally on the game in the 51st minute. Toto Aviles has a really bad turnover, catches Miami out of structure, and they get a transition opportunity. The back line is just way too spread out, and they really didn't have any chance to defend it. Dos Santos, I also thought he could have done a little bit better on this shot, but really it's just, this is what happens when you have a center back have a bad turnover, them pounce on it, and then being a good transition team, 2-0 New York Red Bulls. Anything on this goal?
Yeah, Aviles, what was he doing there, man? I think even before that, he had a couple of instances where he gave the ball away. So there were signs that he needs to calm down. He needs to sharpen up. And then his mistake led to that goal. But Morgan and Van Zier really terrorized our backline that entire game. And we'll get into it. But yeah, their combination really hurt us.
Moving forward a little bit in the 59th minute, that's when we get the substitutes. Robert Taylor and Lawson Sunderland come out. Leo Afonso, Yannick Bright make their debuts, professional debuts. Moving forward to the 66th minute, that's when New York Red Bulls get their third goal. Toto Aviles, this is when he sort of goes in for a tackle right around the midway point on the field, falls, doesn't get up. I think he's looking for a foul, but he stays down. The ball then goes to the left where he vacates, or where he's vacated. Lewis Morgan, tremendous energy, tremendous effort. That was sort of an all-heart type of run. Julian Gressel tries to make up for it, but he can't. And then Lewis Morgan makes a run down the baseline, dumps it to Van Zier, who kind of lays it off for Wiki Carmona, who puts in the back of the net. This was tough. This was like, I think the one where you felt like, okay, this is like a problem. What were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, at this point I was like, we're getting run ragged. They're literally just crushing us right now, because at this point you could tell that it wasn't just about the quality, it was about the effort as well. And the way Morgan kept that ball in play, I think Aviles should have been stronger. I don't think that was a foul on him. I think Gressel should have been stronger. We could have stopped Morgan at least 2 or 3 times there. And he just kept going, kept showing the effort to and determination to keep that ball. And yeah, at this point, I was honestly, I wanted to scream at my television set and be like, please stop, end this game now, because we knew we weren't coming back. Even at 2-0, I thought we could come back. But after this goal went in, I thought they've all given up now.
Yeah, it did feel like we sort of started getting numbers forward and were at least a little bit more of a threat after that second goal. So it felt like maybe we could score a goal and get back into it. But obviously that left us more exposed the other way. And New York Red Bulls did take advantage. Here's the thing. Here are the two other things that I wanted to mention, because I do think Toto Aviles has to be stronger. And I do think Julian Gressel, listen, I know he's not a defender. I know that he's not the guy you want chasing that play down, but he does kind of get bodied off the ball, and not just in a way that he loses, but in a way that he loses so badly that Lewis Morgan winds up in a better position for the encounter. I also just thought the ball went straight through Dos Santos's legs. This is the third time that I felt he probably could have done better, and we'll come back to that later. But it went through Noah Allen's legs. It went through Yannick Bright's legs. That was a tough play, and it wasn't just Gressel and Aviles that probably could have stopped that play. And then also Carmona is running out of the midfield. Neither Sergio Busquets tracks him, and Julian Gressel, after losing Lewis Morgan, probably could have kept an eye on the runner and made a play there. So really, this was a tough play, and I think a lot of players were at fault for this goal, and I think it was encompassing of how bad this performance was. This was the one that really, really hurt. Moving forward, and at this point, the game was over. Inter Miami was sort of out of this game at this point, but the New York Red Bulls add insult to injury. Lewis Morgan gets his hat trick in the 70th minute. Sort of a similar moment where Leo Campana gets tripped up. He goes down a little easily, doesn't get the foul call. Seemingly everyone on Inter Miami expected to get a foul call, so they all sort of hesitated for a minute. The ball gets played forward to Dante Van Zier, who bodies off Noah Allen and then passes it to Lewis Morgan for an easy tap-in. Yeah, what are your thoughts? Because this one was also, I think, there was a lot wrong with this play.
Yeah, at this point, it was just the game passing these players by. I think you mentioned earlier that we put players up the field, and we were in all-out attack mode at this point. So I feel like any counter that would come our way, we wouldn't be able to stop it because we don't have the legs to stop that. No, Allen, man, just could have done so much better on that. I think, he just let Van Zier run through. I think he could have definitely, if not stop him, he could have fouled him. And yeah, we just get caught on the counter. We have so many players upfield trying to get that at least one goal in. Yeah, it was bad.
I don't even want to blame it on us being so far upfield, because I actually thought Yannick Bray and Sergio Busquets tracked the midfield runners well. And I want to give them credit for hustling at that moment, because it could have easily not been the case. It was actually Toto Aviles who I think got a little lazy on that play. They had the front two running with Van Zier and Lewis Morgan. And once Noah Allen gets passed by, Sergei Kristoff has to come over to try and stop him. And Toto Aviles never gets back in the play. He's sort of just jogging behind Lewis Morgan. He never puts himself in a position to make a play on that. So I think that one gives as much credit to Toto Aviles for that goal as I would to Noah Allen, because he should have been better and he didn't have a great game. So we'll talk about him more a little bit later. But moving forward, Pep Casas makes his debut in the 74th minute. We get another few subs. Gressel comes off. Toto Aviles comes off. Ryan Saylor gets his season debut. And then the last moment I wanted to talk about was the goal for Inter Miami. Leo Afonso gets a nice turnover up the field and sort of passes it off to Noah Allen, who chips the keeper. It does get waved off by VAR because Leo Afonso has a nice shove in the back on Dylan Nealis, but it was at least a positive moment for Inter Miami. They didn't quit, especially those guys down the left, the young guys. That play would have made this more bearable if it had stood, just because we would have fought back to get a goal. It would have been some of the young guys having a really nice moment, and it gets taken off. Any other moments in this game that you wanted to talk about?
No, man, honestly, I want to forget this game as soon as possible, but we've covered most of them. I think just generally this game felt like our players were standing still and the New York players were just running past. I think that's what this game felt like in terms of encompassing how the feeling of this game was. But not a great show from a lot of our players, a lot of our senior players, a lot of our experienced players, and warning signs all around, wake up call for them for sure. And I just wonder what the players who are in international duty are thinking, because they're like, oh, without us, you can't even hold the fourth down. So shame that it came to a 4-0 scoreline, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, let's spend a few minutes just talking about New York Red Bulls, because I think they deserve a lot of credit. I know while I was watching, I was just thinking about how bad Inter Miami was playing, but the Red Bulls played really well. They didn't turn the ball over in bad spots. They were very clinical. I know Van Zier had a few missed chances, but they were very clinical in their opportunities. It's not like they were firing 25 shots in. It wasn't like they were creating 20 opportunities for four goals. They were good, and they didn't turn the ball over in the midfield. I mean, they were good. Anything about the Red Bulls, I mean, we talked about the hustle. We talked about the energy, the enthusiasm. It was raining. It was not a fun game to play in, I'm sure, and they took that to heart and played with heart. How'd you feel about them?
Yeah, not just the effort and the drive that they had. I think they had a game plan. They came with a game plan on how to beat this Inter Miami team, and they stuck to that game plan, and they did really well with it. They wanted to make use of their two strikers up top, Van Zier and Morgan, and I think their chemistry was phenomenal. Of course, Van Zier had four assists. Morgan had a hat-trick. And the way they were playing off each other, but not just them two, I think New York Red Bulls did what Galaxy did against us by playing a solid, narrow structure and not allowing, you know, the open transitions that Inter Miami can hurt them on. I think they were defensively solid. They were crisp and sharp in their passing. They had good movement of the ball. I think everyone knew their role. And despite the fact that they were missing so many players in the midfield, I think they did really well. They had a plan to shut Sergio Busquets out. He was the main outlet in the midfield. And we spoke about this in the pregame, that if you stop Sergio Busquets from getting the ball out to our attackers and our front line, you can stop this midfield. And that's what they did. I think Amaya had a really good game. He had a few opportunities. I think one long ball that he passed on to Van Zier, which led to a chance. And he was solid in midfield. But I think overall, from back to front, New York Red Bull was just the better team.
Yeah, I think you talking about their structure was a good notice, because I felt they didn't come out in this all-effort press that we expected, especially in the second half. They really sat off a lot. When Inter Miami was at their worst, it wasn't because the Red Bulls were pressing them out of existence. They played very narrow, both in the back line and through the midfield, which made it very difficult for Inter Miami to progress the ball. The fullbacks for the Red Bulls didn't bomb forward really at all. Kyle Duncan had maybe two or three runs in the first half, but that was it. They played really disciplined defensively. And so it wasn't, you know, knowing that, it wasn't surprised me that Inter Miami was going to struggle to get going offensively. And when that happens, and when we have turnovers like we did, and I'll talk about the turnovers in a minute, but it's actually not a surprise that the game played out the way it did. Obviously, I think you'd always expect Inter Miami to be good for a goal or two, but just considering everything, I didn't think it was surprising. I thought the Red Bulls played really well, and they played really disciplined. And I know that's sort of easy to say. If you want to beat a better team than you, you just have to play well and play disciplined. But they did that yesterday, and it paid off.
And the nature of their goals was different as well. The first goal was quite like, it wasn't high press, but they were playing with a really high intensity. And obviously, they didn't turn the ball in the first goal, but they knew where their positioning was supposed to be, and they were high up. As you said, the defenders were playing in the midfield position, and you know they were playing a high line there. And then the last couple of goals came on a counter transition, and they knew that if they just sit back and be disciplined in defense, there's going to be opportunities to hurt Inter Miami on the counter, and that's what they did. So I think all around, they had a proper game plan, and we discussed this, that their coach is a lot more flexible than Lesen, their previous coach, and they might not come out with an all-out high-press style. And I think teams are slowly starting to learn that if you are defensively sound and narrow and compact against this Inter Miami team, you have a better chance than if you play a free-flowing, all-out, open game.
Yeah, and let's come back to that in a minute, because we're going to talk about the 3-5-2 with Inter Miami. But just to wrap up our discussion on the New York Red Bulls, Dante Van Zier, Lewis Morgan, four assists for Van Zier, three goals for Lewis Morgan. I know getting a hat trick helps, but now Morgan leads the MLS in goals scored, and Van Zier leads the MLS in assists through five games. They were excellent, and it feels like the Red Bulls are, if they can get this level of, or not this level, but close to this level of quality from that front two, they're going to be a good team. Lewis Morgan, obviously a former Inter Miami player. So was Dylan Nealis, their right back in this game. If it had to happen, I'm glad it was Lewis Morgan. He's a favorite of a lot of Inter Miami fans. He was our all-time leading goal scorer at one point in Inter Miami history. So he was good. He's been dealing with injuries over the last 18 months or so. And so to see him come off and play well was, you know, frustrating and tough, but also I'm glad it was him and not anyone else. Anything on these two guys?
Yeah, I think Lewis Morgan took his goals really, really well. I think he had maybe three shots and he scored three goals. Not in terms of just the output, but also the way they hustled for their team and the way they were setting up. I think they had a definite plan in mind and how to exploit this backline and how to play against this Inter Miami defense. And them two and their combination and chemistry really hurt us. And well done to them. Honestly, not anything more to say. I wish Campana and Suarez were on the same wavelength as them, because at one point I was thinking, please play like them.
Listen, this is an Inter Miami show, so we're not going to talk too much about the Red Bulls. We'll probably wrap it up here. But I think we both think they played really well, and it wasn't just a matter of Inter Miami being awful, even though that was part of it. But the Red Bulls actually came out with a good game plan. They executed well. They were disciplined. They weren't turning the ball over. And then their front two attackers finished their chances. Okay, let's talk about what went wrong structurally. And let's start with the 3-5-2. Again, we both felt they had to play this formation based on the available personnel, but it still wasn't pretty.
Yeah, I feel like this 3-5-2 formation sort of gets caught between being too offensive and being too defensive. Like, there's no balance in this team. And the perfect example of that is how many gaps this backline has when we're playing that 3-5-2. I think because Jordi Alba on that wing-back position is so offensive-minded and doesn't necessarily do his defensive duties entirely, it pulls out Allen, which then pulls out Avilés. Sorry, which then pulls out Cristal, which then pulls out Avilés. And it just creates a whole load of domino effect that leads to structural issues across the back line. And I think the same for the midfield. When we don't have the legs for Diego Gomez and Redondo in that midfield, Sergio Busquets is not able to do the tracking of the runners when the other team is trying to create overloads in the midfield or trying to push their runners forward. So I think there's just a whole load of structural issues that come with the 3-5-2. And the personnel is not suited to play this formation. I think that's the conclusion that I've come to after this game. I think with the offensive mindedness of Jordi Alba and Robert Taylor in this game, I think Robert Taylor is more defensive minded probably than Jordi Alba. I think it just creates too many issues. And for someone like a New York Red Bull who can hurt you in the defense when you need to be defensively sound and you're not able to take chances of in offense and not able to create those goal-scoring opportunities, it just creates a whole lot of chaos.
Yeah, to me, this, and I want to be clear, I don't hate a back three generally. It's not my favorite. I prefer a back four. But this, what I'm about to say, is a Tata Martino 3-5-2 that I'm about to complain about. And it starts with the back three. Here's the problem. It's twofold. You want your team to play offensively. You want them to play expansively. And so that requires the two outside center backs to play wide so that you have plenty of passing outlets and you can create this sort of umbrella around the defense. So you have, you can create plenty of opportunities in the middle with runners and still have outlets outside. That's the first reason they play really wide with the back three. But then the second reason is our fullbacks are just, or rather our wingbacks are just bombing up the field. So what it creates is three really wide defenders that are not super athletic. At least Christoph isn't, Fred is not, Sailor's not. And you're asking them to cover the entire width of the field with three guys when frequently the two outside center backs are playing on the touchline at the on the sides of the field. So you're really asking one guy to cover the entire middle third of the pitch, and it leaves you so vulnerable to defensive transitions. It's hard to communicate when you're 25 yards apart from each other, and it doesn't, it's just like not well structured, especially when, like we saw yesterday, two of those three are 20 years old. They don't have the experience, even though they might have the athleticism, they don't have the experience to understand how to play this well. So the key to me is them playing more narrow defensively. Yes, it makes you less expansive when you're going forward, but you have so many good players in this team that you don't need to create opportunities with just your formation. The great players will create those chances, and you'll be much more defensively solid if they play much more narrow. We saw that against Nashville in the second CONCACAF Champions Cup game, where the wingbacks, Julian Gressel and Jordi Alba, mostly Gressel, they played really deep, which allowed the center backs to play very narrow. And that's why we felt a lot more defensively solid in that game. But here we go. You know, this is our next game playing with that. And with the 3-5-2, three in the back. And here we are with our center backs really spread wide and just so much space for two good strikers to attack.
And yeah, I agree with you completely. I think the gaps are created by the formation itself. I think Tata Martino wants the center backs to play wide.
Sure.
Yeah, it's intentional. Yeah. And there are a few solutions to that, which we've seen Tata Martino utilize. I think one of the solutions is to have a midfielder come drop back into the back line and create a back four to plug that gap in so that it's not as expansive. What that does is that leaves the midfield slightly vulnerable, because then the opposition can create overloads in the midfield. The other side of that, which you've already mentioned, is have one of the fullbacks stay back, be more defensive, and the other one be more offensive. And we saw that in that game against Nashville, and I think a couple of other times as well, where we defended in a back four. Our defensive structure was a 4-4-2 rather than a 3-5-2. Our offensive structure was a 3-5-2 when we were on the ball. But when we lost the ball, Gressel would come back and we would sit back in a 4-4-2 and defend. And that plugs the gaps immediately. And that just allows the spacing issue. And even against DC United, we saw that we played a 3-5-2 against DC United, right?
No, that's where we played the back four with David Ruiz in the
back. But even with DC United, what this team has started, like, because how wide our back line is, it sort of creates pockets of spaces in the defense. And we saw Christian Benteke occupy that pocket of space and have a couple of goal scoring opportunities when we were playing against DC. And then again yesterday against Red Bull, we saw Van Zier and Morgan occupy those spaces and just sit there and wait for the ball to come to them.
Yeah, but I think we did much better against DC, especially once Christoph came on. I don't know if Freda was sort of nursing something going into that game or he injured himself during the game, but once Christoph came on, I don't think we were allowing very many spaces. And that's with, you got to remember, those two fullbacks in that game were Noah Allen and David Ruiz, two young players that haven't played a lot of fullback this season. And then, you know, going back before that game, we played three straight games with a back three. The first Nashville game, we gave up two goals to Jacob Schaffelberg, to a Nashville team that's not very good offensively. We gave up three goals to Montreal, a team that we felt we should have crushed. And then that third game against the Nashville in the CONCACAF Champions Cup second leg, which I just referenced, where we played much more reserved with our fullbacks. So it felt like this formation was evolving for Tata, but we went back to what we had done in the first couple games and what we saw in the preseason with those center backs really wide and just creating huge holes for the opposition to take advantage of. And like you said, this is Tata's 3-5-2. This is what he wants. This is how it's drawn up. And I, for one, hate it.
I agree.
Just some top line stats now. They've played four games in the 3-5-2. They played four games in the 4-3-3. In the 4-3-3, they've won three out of four and drew one, and they have a +9 goal differential. In the 3-5-2, They played four games, won one, drew one, lost two, and have a minus three goal differential. So that is a 12 goal difference in their goal differential between the 4-3-3 and the 3-5-2 in just eight total games. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Yeah, and I think the biggest take back is that Tata Martino wants that width, but with the 4-3-3, we can have the defensive solidity at the same time have that width because the three in the center are able to stretch the field out. I think in the 3-5-2, the back line is having to stretch that field out, and with the two fullbacks bombing forward simultaneously, that just completely leaves the three defenders at the back vulnerable. There are ways to plug this, and I think Tata knows there are ways to plug this, but he's for some reason just doesn't want to. And I, for one, can't wait for Wigan to come in. And
yeah, it's like you mentioned,
4-3-3.
It's like you mentioned, his solution is to play that six deeper and have the, you know, Sergio Busquets or maybe Yannick Bright did a little bit in the second half of this game, come back and act as another member of that back line. But Sergio Busquets can't do that. He just can't. And so it just doesn't work. And, you know, I think having Federico Redondo and Sergio Busquets both in the midfield at the same time really helps with playing out of the back because they're both good at that. And you can't, as a defense, just key in on one of them. But I'm not sure that Federico Redondo really solves that problem either, or at least I don't think we've seen him try yet. So I don't know. I would rather just go to the 4-3-3, especially because, yes, we have another MLS game at home next weekend, but the game after that is a midweek game against Monterrey, and that's a must-win game at home. So there's not a lot of time to try and fix this. I think just go with the 4-3-3, pray that Wigan gets his work permit and he's ready to go for next weekend, and just run him out there for the next 180 minutes in a 4-3-3. That's what I would do. So yeah. Anything else about this game or the team that you want to talk about? I wanted to talk about the refereeing and the conditions and how that impacted this team. But before I do, is there anything you want to say about the refereeing?
I think the refereeing was a product of the conditions that we were playing in. I think some of the decisions went in favor of Miami and some of the decisions went against us. But I wasn't too concerned about I was watching other things that were concerning me than the refereeing decision. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, for me, it wasn't that the referee was bad. It was that he wasn't calling ticky-tack fouls. And that was evident from the very beginning of the game. And Inter Miami didn't adjust to that at all. They were constantly looking for fouls. Both of the last two goals for New York Red Bulls came on Inter Miami players looking to get a foul, not getting it, and then just being out of transition. Beaten out of transition. That was like the most frustrating part to me about the refereeing. It was not how he was calling the game, but that Inter Miami didn't adjust to it. And they didn't, you know, drive in and realize they could be a little bit more physical, realize they were going to get away with a little bit more. And instead they were looking for fouls that were just never going to come. With that said, I was a little peeved that the goal got taken off because there was another four, plays just like that that weren't called fouls throughout the game. So not that that extra goal really changes much about this game, but it would have made me feel a little bit better. What about the weather conditions?
Oof, they were awful. At one point, the ball was literally just getting stuck where it landed because it was so wet and damp. So
no. The field was good. Considering how bad it was raining
great.
In the first
yeah,
half.
The field was slick. Good. The field was good. But I think by the second half or the latter end of that first half, because it had been raining so long and so hard, like the ball was getting stuck at times. And you could see that with the way you were kicking, there were splashes of puddle and stuff. When you play in that condition, that's going to happen. It's a product of playing in rain, right? And New York had the same conditions as Miami. So there's not much of an excuse of being like, oh, the conditions weren't great and didn't suit us. But the conditions didn't suit us. Like our style of play is to play that quick 1-2-3 and try and bypass the opposition that way. And it was difficult to play that because I think the ball was either falling short, the players weren't adjusting to how much they need to put in terms of zip on the ball in their passes. And you could just see that there were so many wayward passes. There was so much, like some of them were light, some of them were overhit, some of them were just not in the right direction. So we were all over the place in that first half, I think.
I don't want to blame the weather on why we played bad. I think if anything, it was mental. It felt like
maybe.
The Red Bulls at home in those conditions, they sort of hunkered down and just battled through and kind of excelled because of it. I don't think there's any reason that those conditions pouring, especially in the first half, it was really raining, but the field being a little wet, I don't think that hurts Inter Miami just based on how our players play. But I think mentally it kind of really made it hard for them to get going. They didn't even want to come out of the half. And I think that's just because they didn't want to get wet. We'll talk about Leo Afonso and the subs a little bit later, but when they came on, you could feel it being like a sense of fresh breath. And it was because it was young players in their first ever game, really trying to make a difference. And it was like, you could tell the difference between the starters
energy.
Who didn't want to feel like it felt like they didn't want to be there. And, some of the guys off the bench. Anything else about the team play? I want to ask you who we missed most from the guys missing, but before we do that, is there anything else about the team collectively that you wanted to talk about?
Just a bad performance all around.
Yes. And we will talk about all of them individually, but before we get into who did play, let's talk about who didn't. Who did Inter Miami miss most from the guys that were absent? And maybe let's leave Lionel Messi off because I think that's, too easy.
I think the biggest issue that we faced was not having the energy in the legs of Diego Gomez and or Frederico Redondo in that midfield. I think that was our biggest miss because they just automatically add this level of energy and freshness, and with Redondo coming in, takes away some of the defensive duties that Busquets needs to worry about. And they just give us a lot more stability and balance in that midfield. And having them out was, I think, the biggest loss for me.
Well, I appreciate you taking two options off the table for me. But fortunately, it wasn't the guy I was going to mention. And that was Drake Callender. I tweeted about this earlier today, and it felt like it got some question mark reactions. Drake Callender, and we talked about this in the midweek episode, has been one of the best goalkeepers as a shot stopper, like period, not in the MLS, not among Americans, but just period so far this season. He's been excellent. If he's having one of his good games, like one of those games where he's like the difference maker, he saves all three of those first three goals. I feel confident in saying that. So, and of course, if Red Bulls don't score until the 71st minute, this is an entirely different game. I rewatched all three goals and it didn't feel like people were talking about this, but Dos Santos, who, none of them were like easy goals, but like a great shot stopper, has a chance to save all three of them. Did you notice this drop off from Callender to Dos Santos? And I don't want to slam Dos Santos, because I'm not saying any of them were like easy, where he made a mistake or he was, the reason it was a goal, but it felt like all three of them, Callender could have maybe done better.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the ifs and buts of it, because honestly, you don't know what would have happened if Callender was in goal. But I do agree with you that when I saw the goals happening in real time, they just seemed too easy. They just seemed like they just rolled in. And I felt like, yes, Dos Santos could have done better. Was that a product of the conditions that he was playing in, and just the rain pouring down is obviously not easy. And, they were good finishes. They were all good corner finishes. Yeah, so it wasn't.
We watched Stroud last week against when we played DC United. He had a goal and early on that was like a rocket, upper corner to top of the net. I mean, it was like, there's just nothing you can do about that as a goalkeeper. All of these, I mean, that fourth one, there was just no chance. But the first three, it felt like they weren't rockets. They weren't from, placed in the top corner. It was like, I don't know.
They were well placed, and I agree with you that if DeSantos was better positioned, he would have been able to cover at least a couple of them.
Or just a little quicker.
Yeah, it is what it is. I don't want to take away anything from the finish of those goals. They were well placed, good goals. But again, maybe he could have done better.
Yeah, so that's just my opinion on, and you're all free to disagree, but I felt like if Drake Callender was in this game and he was having a good game, this could have been, he could have been like the guy who really made a difference, and it could have made a much happier afternoon.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm looking at the XG right now, and it's 1.23.
Yeah, no, he didn't. Goals, so. Dos Santos, the advanced statistics, and I think this was backed up by watching the replay, the advanced statistics say that they should have scored maybe one and a half, and that it maybe two of them were Dos Santos should have done better. So I thought there was a pretty significant drop off from a goalkeeping situation that is a positive for the team to one that's a slight negative. So maybe our depth in that position isn't as good as we maybe thought. Anything else about the game before we get into awards? Okay, let's get into awards so that we can get over this game as soon as possible. As always, we'll start with the man of the match, and it is my turn to go first for this. I thought there was really only one obvious answer, and that was Leo Afonso. He came off the bench. He was a spark. He was working hard in a way that a lot of our players didn't seem to be. He was pushing guys off the ball. He really wanted it. He wanted to make an impression. He should have gotten an assist on the Noah Allen goal. In a game where not many guys played fantastic, he was at least a bright spot. And I do have some counter arguments to that, but I want to hear your thoughts on his performance first.
No, I think he looked really, really fresh. He's what, 19?
22.
22. Okay, that's a significant difference. Yeah. But no, I think he looked really good for his first professional appearance for the club. I think he came in a very difficult situation and didn't do much wrong as such. You know, I would have hoped that he would have been able to come on and change the game and not having to deal with a 3-0 scoreline. But he did make the best of what was in front of him, and he looked sharp. He looked energetic. He was willing to push forward and get on the ball. And yeah, I think the one goal that was chalked off, he had an involvement in that as well. So overall, good signs from him.
I do want to slow the roll on some of the conversation I saw after the game about him. Again, I rewatched the game this morning, and he was the best player for Miami. He was the bright spot for Miami. I don't think he played particularly well, or I don't think he played in a way that made me think he has to be a part of this first team moving forward. He was energetic and he was trying things, but I don't think he pulled a lot of them off. And so when you get the full squad back, I don't think he's part of this team, or he really has a role. And I also want to say about him and Pep Casas, and if we ever see Ricardo Montenegro, Inter Miami has no spots to add another homegrown player to the roster. Their roster's maxed out. So until the summer, and maybe we get some of these guys on loan or traded or whatever, we're not going to sign any of these guys. So they'll get four chances to play. And for those three, this was one of them. Don't think we should spend too much time on the Miami man of the match in a game we lost 4-0. So why don't I throw it to you for the heron that flew north, our award for the player that is doing the wrong thing in this game.
Can we hand out like 10 of these awards, please?
No, just one. Just one.
Yeah, I have that one in mind, and I think it's evident.
Before you say it, I felt like there was three players that stood out above the rest in terms of poor performances. And I want to know if you picked one of those three, but let's hear it.
My heron that flew north is Julian Gressel.
He was not one of them. Go ahead.
Was missing. I did not see him at all throughout that game. Like he was the one who I expect to now take charge when Messi is not there. I want him to be the playmaker. I want him to be the leader. I want him to be the one who's running the strings in that midfield or in, you know, in the attacking third. but he just did not have a great game at all. I think he was absent. He misplaced passes. He had a 69% pass accuracy. He had zero long balls that were successful. He had only one cross and zero ground duels won, zero aerial duels won. And here's the big one. He lost possession 15 times. And yeah, it's just not a great performance from him overall. I think he would have been one of the players where I would have circled and been like, okay, he needs to take this game by the scruff of its neck and make that difference and be in charge. But yeah, he was just missing. And for someone who's trying to fill in that position, especially competing with Diego Gomez, Frederico Redondo, I think he needs to definitely pull his socks up, because we've been missing that impactful performance from him where we're just like, wow, this is why we signed him.
Yeah, I think the last time we saw him in the midfield was the game against Orlando City, where he was very impressive in that game. And it's been 3 or 4 weeks since then, and we were curious about how he would react to being in the midfield after being on the right wing for so long, and it wasn't good. I think you're being way too harsh on him compared to some of the other players. He was missing from this game. I agree with everything you said. He wasn't good. He wasn't an impact player, and you probably wanted him to be, but I thought there was three players, and they'll get awards, so don't worry about it. But I thought there were several players that were really negatives in ways that Julian Gressel was just absent, and these guys were difference makers in a bad way.
Yeah, there's another reason that I want to give him this particular award is because I think he hasn't been at his best for Inter Miami yet. And I think this was the game that summed it up perfectly. Like, he just didn't show up. And I expect so much more from him that it was more so also about, dude, he needs to do better than others being bad. I probably know who you're referring to, but I think him was more so of, this is the game where you need to show up and you are not there. It's, you know, a big red flag for me, I think. So that's why the heron that flew north goes to Julian Gressel. And hey, it's my award, so let me decide who I want to give it to.
No. It's definitely your award. He is the official heron that flew north for this game. He, I don't want to make it all bad for Julian Gressel, because it felt like he was growing into the midfield over the first three games up through that Orlando City game. It felt like, you know, we're playing in the 4-3-3. Julian Gressel, Busquets, and Diego Gomez were sort of getting it going. And then we sort of broke that up when we traded Yedlin and switched to 3-5-2. And it doesn't feel like he's found himself since then. I did have an award, a negative award for him, so I don't think it's like a crazy shout, but yeah.
And just to your last point, this is something that I was referring to earlier, that I feel like this team is, for players, it's all about consistency in knowing where their positions are. And at this point, it feels like we're just moving pieces around too much. And that's sort of hurting the consistency of this team and just, you know, allowing players to settle into their positions. Because even if someone like Julian Gressel is coming off the bench, if he knows he's playing in the midfield, he knows what his role is, he's going to have a lot more impact. Constantly switching these players around is not helpful. And obviously, we're just at the start of the season and we're trying to get our roster ready. We're waiting for a right back to come in, maybe even Matias Rojas to come in. So that's probably going to change, and players are going to know their positions going forward. But at least right now, there just seems to be a lack of stability.
When I rewatched the game this morning, I tracked the number of midfield or defensive turnovers from every player, at least up until the fourth goal. So for the first 70 minutes, how many turnovers did each player have that put Inter Miami in a bad position? And Julian Gressel had 3. That was not the most on this list by a solid margin, but he did have some bad turnovers. So I don't think this is a bad shout. Maybe there is a conversation to be had about Julian Gressel's role moving forward in terms of being in the starting lineup. Because if Lionel Messi's healthy next weekend, he's going to start at right wing. Campana Suarez will be the strikers. Robert Taylor at left wing. Wigan, when he comes, he's going to be the right back. Your midfield feels like it's going to be Redondo, Gomez and Busquets. So it feels like Julian Gressel, who started every game so far this season, is going to the bench, and it may start next Saturday.
Yeah.
So worth probably noting. Let's move on to the next award, and I am giving the Umbrella Shop Award. And good luck guessing this, because it could be
anywhere. Need to explain for myself and for the listeners what the Umbrella Shop implies.
The Umbrella Shop Award means you got to go to the Umbrella Shop, grab an umbrella, get out of the rain because you are not good in the rain, get over it, and sort of move on without worrying about the rain anymore and kind of just move on to the next game. But you were bad in this game.
I'm trying
go
to
the umbrella
about,
shop, get an umbrella, feel good about it.
I'm trying to think
umbrella.
About the players who we haven't spoken about, and is this,
and by the way,
Toto Aviles?
This is Toto Aviles. He would have been my, if I was giving out the heron that flew north, he would have been the guy.
He was my very, very close second as well for the heron that flew north.
Yeah, this was his worst game as an Inter Miami player going back to last season.
Awful.
He was really bad. He's a young player, and you expect inconsistency. And we've seen inconsistency this year, and I've sort of written it off as just being a young player developing. This game was, like, really bad. Like I said, I counted the number of turnovers from bad positions. Toto Aviles had 5, which still wasn't the most of any player, and I'm sure he'll get an award too. But Aviles had 5 bad turnovers. He was responsible for 2 goals, I think. And he was out of position a lot. It was just a really bad game from Toto Aviles.
Yeah, so many turnovers. I think there was a time when I was literally screaming at my screen for Aviles to cover a certain position. He just seemed lost. He didn't know what was happening. But he was looking around a few times as well to see where he's supposed to be and what he's supposed to be doing. But yeah, he did not have a great game. And I completely agree with you. I think he had the shot to be the heron that flew north for sure. I'm just looking at his stats as well. And he's lost the ball about 15 times. Didn't even try a single ground duel. No crosses. Accurate passes were 82, but a lot of them were between him and the back line. So overall, not a very impactful performance. But worse than that, I think he was culpable for a couple of the goals himself by letting the ball go and then not covering his man for the 4th goal. So, yeah, overall, a lot left to desire for his performance.
Yeah, his goal, his turnover directly led to the 2nd goal. And then I think he definitely should have done better tracking in the 4th goal. And in the 3rd goal, he goes for trying to get a foul. And then he just isn't in position. So you could say 3 of the goals are really on him. Listen, he's still a young player. I'm just looking up. He's still 19. He doesn't even turn 20 until August. So he's a young player with a lot of tools. But we've seen now Diego Gomez has gotten consistent playing time, and he's improved. We saw last year Kramaski get consistent playing time. He got better. This is how young players, you know, they're going to go through ups and downs, but you can't have stinkers like this and expect to just keep getting run out there every single week. And that's what he's going to do every single thing. They're going to play him every week as long as he's healthy. And
he's our starting center back. Yeah.
He's our number one center back, and he can't have games like this. At least not until Ian Frey comes back and just shows him how great Ian Frey is. But I'm still, that's still more hope than anything else right now. Okay. Next award to you.
All right, I still need to think of what my award is. So I'm gonna call this the Better Off the Bench Award. I'd like to hear your thoughts on who you think this is.
The Better Off the Bench Award goes to Lawson Sunderland.
That could have been my second shout for sure.
Okay.
But my first shout is Leo Campana. I think I don't think he was bad by any means, as we spoke about him. I don't think he was awful. He didn't have too much to do. He didn't have too much service. But I think there were a couple of instances where I thought he didn't do what he was supposed to do. I think Luis Suarez is our primary striker. And when you're playing 2 strikers up top, one of them has to be more of a false 9 slash number 10 slash service link between the midfield and the the primary striker. And I think Leonardo Campana was that role. He does it really well normally in other games where he has a good hold-up play, he passes the ball around well, but he just didn't have that impact today. And I just wonder if he would have been better coming off the bench when we needed a slightly different dynamic, because the Red Bull backline dealt with the Suarez-Campana combination fairly easily and fairly well. And I think he would have had a more impactful performance if he was coming off the bench. But I'm not sure what your thoughts on this are.
We had 15 players playing this game, 11 starters and 4 guys that came off the bench. I thought he was one of the 5 best players. He worked hard defensively for an attacker, and the offense got no service. So everything you said was right, for sure. But it just is like, it's so easy for me to explain away why he wasn't impactful. Luis Suarez wasn't impactful either. So it's just, I don't know. It's a fine award. I think he's going to get plenty of game time this year, and most of it will probably come off the bench, where I do think he's going to be expected to be a difference maker. And so he'll have those opportunities. He had a few turnovers in this game. Like I said, I tracked the bad turnovers. He had 2, actually had 3. So definitely 9. He wasn't faultless. He may have had 9 ball possessions lost, but 3 were like in a bad spot.
Turnovers, yeah.
Yeah. So I hear what you're saying. I felt like there was some other players that had much worse performances.
Oh yeah, for sure. And this is not a performance about how bad he was this is not an award about how bad he was. This is more so an award about how he would have been most impactful and most effective, perhaps. And also a conversation about him being injured before the game. So it might have been worth him being on the bench for this one and having Robert Taylor up top. But again, hindsight 2020, it's easier to complain now than it is. If he'd scored a couple of goals, we'd been raving about him. So
yeah, in my head, he was never actually injured at all. Like, it was just it was just it happens. No. But okay, I don't have an award name yet, but I had one for Julian Gressel, and so I'm gonna sort of slowly change the name. My next award is the apparently Jazz Ain't Easy Award.
Ooh. Okay.
I'll be honest, I already hate the name of the award, but go ahead.
Is this Jordi Alba?
It is Jordi Alba.
Oh, I don't know why I gave it to him, but go on, explain it.
This was originally for Julian Gressel, and it was about, Jazz Ain't Easy. You got to find the rhythm in order to make the blues. I didn't have an award for Jordi Alba because I was so confident he was going to be here, Heron that flew north. But he was awful, man. He was so bad. He was so bad. He led the team in bad turnovers. He had 6 turnovers in the first 70 minutes that led to bad situations for Inter Miami. I think he led the team in total turnovers, but 6 in the first 70 minutes that led directly to New York Red Bull dangerous opportunities, whether they took advantage of them or not, that was up to them. But Jordi Alba was bad, man. This was a game where they really clogged the midfield. The Red Bulls really clogged the midfield. So you would expect a lot from your wing backs in terms of ball progression. He didn't do that a lot. In the pregame, I talked about how there's probably an opening for Jordi Alba to make those long crosses to Robert Taylor, making runs down the right side. Didn't see that one time. Jordi Alba, for a guy that he's Jordi Alba, right? We saw him take over a game a week and a half ago, or 2 weeks ago now. He was just bad, man. He was just bad.
I actually had the award for him as well, and I called it the Doppelganger Award because it didn't feel like Jordi Alba showed up to this game. So
that's a better award.
Yeah, I feel like it was an imposter playing in that position. I agree. I think with Red Bull clogging up that midfield and being narrow and compact, the opportunity was there for Robert Taylor and Jordi Alba to make themselves more available on the ball, at least, and do more with it and be the outlets to progress the ball and hold the ball when needed. Of course, I think Red Bull did a really good job of pinning us on our sidelines when we tried that outlet. But I think Jordi Alba just didn't have a great game. Like he wasn't available when he needed him to be. I think he was pushing too far when, you know, the backline needed some sort of protection. And I completely agree with you. I think this was one of his poorest performances so far this season.
What's your next award? What's your last award before we wrap it up?
I have a name, but I'm trying to think whether it's a good name or not. And I'm going to go with, this is the Big League Son Award. And I'd like to see who you think this is.
This is the Big League's Son Award. That clearly, without a doubt, obviously, goes to CJ Dos Santos.
Ooh, good shout.
And by CJ Dos Santos, I mean Lawson Sunderland.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. There you go. Yeah, you got it. Yeah. I remember when we play the circle the lineup game, I think I circled Lawson Sunderland in that midfield because for me, he was going to be a key difference maker, not because of his ability, but because I think he's fulfilling a role that has been so important for this team up until now. I think he's filling in that Diego Gomez, Frederico Redondo role. And I think if this team was to be successful, he would have had to have a really, really good game, but also have that impact. And he just did not, I think. And it's not entirely his fault. I think he tried to do his best. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't at fault too much for any of the goals. He didn't necessarily put a wrong foot that led to a goal, but I think he just didn't have that extra impact that we wanted from him or that we needed from him. I think he had 36 touches, which is not great for a midfielder. And he didn't have the... So in the previous games, what we saw was Redondo or Gomez taking the ball and making the runs. We didn't see that role from him this time around. He wasn't responsible for a lot of the passing or the distribution either. And maybe whether that was the result of the team being really bad around him, but I think he just didn't have a great game. So the question is he ready for the big leagues, son?
Lawson Sunderland is 22. It didn't seem like he was a guy that Inter Miami as a club felt had a bright future this time a year ago. It really was Tata Martino who sort of plucked him out of the B team and integrated him into the first team, gave him his first cap, gave him his first run of games, gave him his first start this year, put him on the first team, got him that first team contract. He's 22, but at this, you know, he's still young in terms of being a professional. Not in terms of being a prospect maybe, but in terms of being a professional, he's still young. But to me right now on this team, he's just a guy. I'm looking at the other midfielders in this, you know, on our roster. Sergio Busquets is, they're not even comparable. Redondo has everything that Sunderland has plus everything else is plus, you know, 10 points on the rating scale. Julian Gressel, very different type of player, but I think we both, you know, he's got the experience. He's got more, way more final third product than Lawson Sunderland has. Diego Gomez is probably his best comparison. And Diego Gomez is just bigger, stronger, more athletic, faster, more dangerous, more menacing, more of a threat. David Ruiz, you know, probably also his best comparison, but I like Ruiz better. He's got more in the final third.
I would still take Ruiz.
Better in transition. Benjamin Kramaski, you know, I put him up there with Diego Gomez, much more athletic, much more physical, much better in the final third, much better in transition. And then Yannick Bright is probably a similar athlete, a little bit smaller, but has much better defensive instincts. So on this team with a lot of really exciting young midfielders, Lawson Sunderland feels like a guy who's just a guy. He's tall. And that's nice, especially, you know, last season we had a lot of trouble with our height in terms of, you know, our team size. But this year it doesn't feel like he's
going to be
a standout in any way. And so I'm a little worried about Sunderland's either I'm worried about how much game time he's going to get this year in terms of he's not going to get enough to develop, or he's going to get so much that it's preventing some of the other young midfielders a chance from getting their own minutes.
Yeah, I would agree with you. We spoke about Gressel might start off the bench, which in itself is a little bit of a, you know, oh, do you want Julian Gressel coming off the bench or starting? So now imagine Sunderland, who's probably our final choice midfielder, what kind of minutes he's going to get. And there may even be a conversation worth happening about letting Sunderland go and bringing in a defensive backup, a solid defender that we could rely on who has more pace. But that's a conversation for a different day. But I think just in terms of this game, I don't think Sunderland had that level of impact that we wanted him to or expected him to. And going forward, he's going to have to take these chances with both hands because he's not going to get too many of them, especially not from the starting spot. So we'll see how that goes.
And listen, I don't want to be too hard on him because, like I said, he's still young for a player. I do think he's an MLS caliber player. He isn't the reason we lost today or yesterday. Yep. He isn't the reason we played poorly. He's a guy that you can throw in the starting lineup, and if everything's going well, he's going to be a fine player.
He'll do a job.
Yeah, he'll do a job. So I don't want to be too hard on him. We ranked him 20th on the team. I think once we bring in Marcelo Wiegandt and Matias Rojas and maybe Yannick Bright is eligible for that list, he might not make the top 20. But that doesn't mean he doesn't deserve to be on the roster. It doesn't mean he's not good enough to be a professional at this level. So those are our six awards. It feels like there's still a bunch of players that we should be talking about because of some of the bad performances. I want to note, because I said there was three players to me that stood out poorly above the rest. And, you know, I mentioned Toto Aviles, I mentioned Jordi Alba. The third was CJ Dos Santos. I thought he was bad. And I think that if you just watch the game, you might not recognize it. But if you rewatch the game, and then if you look at the advanced analytics, he wasn't good. And that needs to be mentioned. I already talked about it a little bit, so we don't have to spend too much time on it. But anyone else that you want to point out?
No, I think just in terms of, I think we've spoken quite a bit about the team in general. And listen, it wasn't a great game overall. But I think there's one thing I want to mention before we wrap up. And that's some of these games, while they might not have as much of a meaning for the full season, like these are, you know, fairly okay games that we can technically lose. But I think some of these games, if we start losing every single game like that, is going to be a long, long season. We lost the game against Montreal. We lost this game as well. I think we can't afford to have a similar performance for at least the next 5 or 10 games. We need to show an upward progression. And you can't just keep dropping points.
Hold on. Let me stop you. Let me stop you. Because we have another segment in this one. And we're going to talk about some big picture questions and we'll catch back on that. But before we leave the individual players, I do want to talk about, you know, a couple other things. The only other player I want to mention as being a negative was Sergio Busquets. He was the captain in this game. And for a performance like that, you should look at the captain and say, you know, why was everyone like this?
Yeah.
Not that he was terrible individually, but as the captain, I would have expected more from a team. And then I also want to talk about the young kids. We talked about Leo Alfonso, but Pep Casas and Yannick Bright, they both got their debuts. Did you notice anything interesting about them that you wanted to mention?
At that point, I was too morose and sad about the result already to notice too much. And I, unlike you, I did not go back and rewatch that horror of a game. But I think for me, Yannick Bright, I think, is definitely a prospect that we're going to see more of going forward. I think he... You could immediately see that Tata saw him in that DM role and he was taking up some good positions trying to protect that back line. And if we'd started him, it might have been a much closer game. So I think he had some good glimpses. But yeah, other than that, it was a positive sign that all three got to have their professional debuts, but it was just sad that they came in such a chaotic moment.
Yeah. Specifically about Yannick Bright, he's the only true holding midfielder on this team. It doesn't feel like Redondo has been that so far, and maybe he'll become that later on. But so it was nice to see like that level, that type of player, because we haven't seen that since we moved on from Gregory in the preseason. And he did have some good moments where he tracked back and he sort of shut things down. He also had a few turnovers, but it's hard for me to blame him for that one. 7 seconds later, Jordi Alba is doing the same thing. And then Pep Casas, you know, Yannick Bright is like the first team player. And Leo Afonso, I think, had some bright sparks. But I actually thought Pep Casas was pretty decent, considering. So I don't know. Inter Miami might have had their best draft ever this past year. And I did want to spend a minute talking about them. Doesn't sound like you have any more individual performances you want to talk about. So let's get into the big picture questions. You just talked about, you were talking about while I interrupted you, and I apologize for that, about how this team can't have that type of performance again. Obviously, 4-0 destruction like this, you can't, this can't happen again this season if you want to feel good about your team. But this was like the first game where I felt like, oh, this team was like bad, not just we lost, we draw, we should have done things better, but this was like a bad performance.
Yeah, it was a worrying performance because this was something that we thought we could, listen, we didn't have most of our players, which is fine, but neither did the other team. And there's absolutely zero excuse to let 4 goals in and have that level of performance. Like, this team was more than capable of beating this New York Red Bulls team. So the fact that we lost, 4-0, and the fact that we didn't show any fight, maybe towards the end a little bit, but it was just too easy. We just rolled out the carpet for them and let them do their thing, which wasn't a great sign at all. So we can't afford to have another performance like this again, and we can't afford to drop points so easily in the future.
How do we move on from this as a team? I mean, I feel like it's, you can see a world where in 2 months we look back on this game and think, you know, the Red Bull are pretty good and it was on the road and it was raining and we were without all these players and it was just like a blip. And even if we didn't feel like that should have been the case at the time, it'll be easy to explain away. But is it going to be easy for the team to just move on and just sort of, you know, come home next week against NYCFC and just, you know, keep it moving?
Yeah, I think you're only as good as your last game, right? So if you can rectify some of these issues that we saw in this game, in the next game, and then build on from there, then this can just be another blimp in the bigger picture. I think the key takeaway here is to bin the 3-5-2 till we can figure out the right personnel and how to fix it. Go back to the 4-3-3 and play what's best for this roster and play players in their best position. And I think that's the best way to recover from this. But the thing is, if we have too many of these blimps, then it can become a whole blot, and a whole blot can just tarnish our entire fucking season. And I apologize for the profanity there. But yeah, this can't happen again. And I just feel like we need to recover from this quick.
Yeah, it's sort of unfortunate we don't have a midweek game because I don't want to have this taste in my mouth for the next 6 days. We do get NYCFC next. They have not been off to a great start. Just some around the league updates before we go. Cincinnati won yesterday, so they actually go top of the table in the East. Columbus lost 2-0. And so even though we fell behind Columbus based on our goal differential during the early game, Columbus's 2-0 loss brought them back below us. So now we're in a 4-way tie for second place with 10 points, Cincinnati on 11 points, but they all have a game in hand on us. So not the start to the season we felt like we were going to get, especially after last week, but here we are. Anything else you want to mention before I sort of wrap it up?
Yeah, I think this team is capable of a lot more, and like we had yesterday, I think we need to let the water brush off our back, take the lessons from this game, and just build on this, because we can't dwell on it too much, but we also need to make sure we don't repeat the same mistakes. So hopefully we can learn from this and then go on and beat the other New York team, maybe even 5-0, and that would just make everything much easier. But overall, not a great game, and definitely a lot of thinking to do for the coaching staff and the players.
Yeah, I just want to thank you and everyone listening for being a part of this, because This was, I think, therapeutic for me to sort of be able to hash all these things out and to find the silver linings in what was a really bad performance. We'll be back for a midweek episode, probably just something fun like we did last week. And then we'll be back for our pregame show next Saturday. The game's our first Saturday night game of the season, I believe. It's going to be at 7:30 Eastern. We'll be on for the pregame show at 6:30 Eastern. But other than that, anything else you want to say before we wrap this up, man? It was not a fun show, but I think one that was good for us.
Yeah, and hopefully we can put this behind us soon and talk about victories going forward rather than defeats. So,
all right, guys, this was episode 17 of the Dry Pink Dialogue. It's been a lot of fun to do this, and I appreciate everyone listening, and we'll see you next time.